Let's see, we ended at the middle of 249. After Herod, being angry, has slain many children in Bethlehem of Judea, and Rachel hath bewailed all her children, and a light hath risen up in the darkness, and the Son of Justice hath appeared from heaven. What's the point? What's the main image there?
Would the sun be the light?
Yeah, the sun's the main image.
Okay.
The sun would refer to consciousness. And of a consciousness that is illuminated by a sun. So the sun can be both an image of the self and of the ego. And what's the relationship between those two things?
Do you want to ask it, though?
I'd say self-killed ego, and ego comes back.
Yeah, this is actually the other side of those arrows,
mm-hmm.
where an ego, when it's healthy, is in the shape that the self has asked it to be in, so to speak. And the ego would be an understanding, our ability to understand. You know, we say, I see. So light is the classic representation of consciousness. And because the sun is not only just light, but the source of life, really, and light. It can also be seen as our source, which is the self. And a healthy self and the sun a healthy ego and a healthy a healthy ego and the self are in the best circumstances illuminated by the same light. The light of the sun is what is illuminating a healthy ego. So that's how they can be. I'm trying to explain how one thing can be two things at the same time. Because when the ego and self are in relationship, they are very similar. It's when the ego and the self are out of whack with each other that you get this great difference. And then the self gets negative. But when the ego and the self are in harmony, when you are empirically who you are meant to be at that phase of your life, then your sun and your sun are paralleled. Your ego sun and your self sun are parallel. The light of your understanding comes from the light of the self. So the self, the sun, is the illuminating body, and the sun, and what receives that sun, the ego, is the illuminated body, but symbolically they're expressed in the same image. In the symbolic mind who's not bothered by contradictions like that.
So we're talking about kind of like that, when you say one thing can be two things at the same time, is it kind of going back to Polly's dream of the female coming out, but no, but something else, and not at all?
Well,
is that calling attention?
Trying to think of Polly's dream.
What you just read about the end where the...
Yeah, I know what I just read. I'm trying to think about Polly's dream. In a way, in Polly's dream, it's not sun imagery.
Right.
But it's water. He goes down into the water and he comes up, Peter Strom. So, see, somewhere down in that water... was the knowledge of the real self, because that's what Peter Strom embodied when he came up. So you could say it's like there's a sun in the ocean, and he goes down and gets that light, and then he comes up, and then he is the sun reflecting the light of that sun. That's how these two things fit together. It's a very frequent image, this business of the sun. I mean, you just say, how many dreams are you outside? It's a sunny day. Well, the sun's in that. And yeah.
When the ego and self are in harmony, is this what we are, if you go into therapy, is this what you're striving for?
Yeah.
Now, we were just discussing over the break about you never get there, that the whole idea was to, at least to have a more interesting life. What was it you were talking about? Make your life more interesting, to live consciously. What James Hollis has said.
What's he say?
That this therapy thing makes your life more interesting, mm-hmm. because you are living more consciously.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you really never quite get there.
You do, for a moment, for a time, for a phase.
A moment.
Well, I wouldn't say for a moment, for a time, for a phase. Well, there are levels of this. Let's say, let's take it practically for a second. Pauli was a professor of physics, and he was, I think, his unconscious was asking him to give a course on this sort of things that we're talking about. So for him to have the ego in harmony with the self would have meant to give that course. And for that phase of his life to be about probably fighting some political battles at that school, because I'm sure they would have vetoed the course, to get that course on the register. And that could have been a 5 or 10 year project. Now that's what it would have meant for him to have his ego and self in harmony. For the son of the self to be the light that the ego shines also as a sun. Now, then after, if he did that, maybe there'll be another challenge for him.
But it wasn't meant during that time that it was all roses and he felt like, oh, I think the ego and self.
Well, I don't assume that the ego and self in harmony means roses.
That's what I mean. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It wouldn't mean like, oh, I have the answers now. I'm doing, doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
It's still difficult, but you're doing it from out of a different place within yourself. That's
maybe the deeper question is, what does it feel like when the ego and the self are in harmony?
Yeah.
Well, again, I think there are a couple of different levels. The most practical level is you feel you're doing what you're here to do. It's a quiet sense of satisfaction. It doesn't mean that you're not going through maybe a lonely time even, or or a particularly easy time. It doesn't mean that there aren't battles. It doesn't mean that, everything seems harmonious.
Hmm.
It just means that, oh, this is why I'm here. And it feels good to give energy to the world on this basis. I don't feel that I'm taking away from myself by giving. I give, obviously I have to make a living, but I am generating and in giving I am filled. A silly example which I use sometimes, it's not that bad really, but let's say you want to start getting exercise. And you think, oh, I'll never get up and walk in the morning. But if I get a dog and I walk that dog in the morning, then I'll won't feel so bad, and I'll get some exercise. See, in giving that dog a walk, you are getting a walk. That's what it's like when the ego and the self are in harmony. You're giving to the world, and you're giving to yourself are the same thing. I think other, other characteristics would be that it is creative. And you will be doing something that needs to be done. And this will get us way too far afield. I don't want to get off onto it now. We might at some point want to get into this. This is not so much Jung, but it's from Arnold Toynbee, who Jung thought highly of, and Toynbee thought highly of Jung, that in each historical era, there are some things that need to be done. Don't ask me to explain that at the moment. That would get us too far off. But different historical moments ask different things of people. There is such a thing as a task in the moment, in the big picture. And I also think that, or perhaps I should say have the faith, that when your ego and yourself are aligned, your work is also in line with what the time needs. If you wanted to look for a biblical precedent to this, I think the Jews got awfully close to this, much more so than the Christians, in their God of history. That there are demands in each historical epoch, and that the individual and the community grow together. Because in their language, God, we wouldn't necessarily say that, is asking something of that nation at this moment. So that's another little twist to it. Now, there is another sense to this, which is synchronicity. That in a synchronistic moment, I'll give you an example. It just happened to me this week. I had a dream. I was to buy a turntable. And it was expensive. I was deciding whether I wanted to buy it or not. I woke up. And I thought, turntable. Well, I had a dream of turntable before, and I took it to the development of my feeling function, because it plays music. I thought, now why not a CD player? Why was that the image? Maybe I don't want that turntable. Maybe that's a regressive image. And so I was literally pondering this as I take French in the morning. I went to Butler, and one of my fellow students, a young guy, an 18-year-old guy, pulls up next to me, and we walked to class. And we started talking, and he said, I said, well, what are you doing in school? He says, oh, I love to listen to music. I said, yeah, well, what are you listening to? He says, oh, I love records. What are the chances that when's the last time you talked to somebody about records? And I even said, don't you listen to CDs? He said, no, I listen to records. And I said, why? He says, because with a record, the needle is touching something. And with CDs, it's only light. And see, I would say that's another moment where ego and self are in harmony. And I tell you, that felt so reassuring that what I'm doing in understanding my own development is right. Now, there you do get the kind of, I don't want to say wondrous, but there's a feeling of completeness at those moments. That's another level of it. And I think these aren't two separate analyses, because when you are striving to have the ego and self in line in your own life and in your relations to the community, these sort of synchronicities are more likely to happen. And that is then another union of my ego and then that unconscious being, that unconscious self being experienced outwardly. So, but basically I think ego self, you're just the person you're supposed to be. It doesn't mean that it's pleasant. It just means it doesn't feel wasted. Another way you might be to put it, if you look back over a year or two and you feel you have wasted it, you haven't been living with the ego and self in relation. When you have lived this stuff, even though that year or two may be very, very, very difficult, you don't feel it's been wasted. You feel good about it. You see, it's beyond the pleasure principle. It's meaning. Another way to put it would be that you're living meaningfully. I've just tried to give you different ways of understanding this. But that's what's... Yeah.
Can I share something?
Yeah.
I had a dream a couple of weeks ago, and there's a part of it where there was a song in the dream, and the song was called The Rainbow Connection. And I looked it up, and I read the words on there, and there's that this one line's been hounding me, and you've said it today, and... the line is, there's someone that I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, you know, that seems to be following me because you said exactly that mm-hmm. same thing to me.
Yep. These are all different words for the sun, S-U-N. There's a great line of Bonnie Raitt's song. It takes a lot of medicine for me to pretend I'm somebody else. So when you're not pretending you're somebody else, and your ego son and your self son are in relationship, or the light of your ego is the light of the sun.
I don't understand that.
What's that?
The light of the ego is the light of the sun.
My understanding, which would be the light, the way I understand things, and the way I give understanding,
mm-hmm.
Is the way of understanding that myself wishes the understanding to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Say that again, please. The last line.
That the way I understand. Imagine understanding can be represented. What represents that understanding is light. And so the light that I am shining, the understanding I am having inside myself and giving out, is the understanding which is within the self. I am just its representative. That's what I'm trying to get with the light. She's not upset with me. She has to pick up her dog. She might be upset with me, but that's not what she's doing. Yeah, it's what I wanted to try to get across is how the ego is an illumination and how the self is an illumination. And when things are going right, those illuminations are the same. It's when they are not going right that they are not the same. And see, in Pali's case, the illumination was, I should teach this course, but the illumination of his ego, 9 to 5, was, I'm not teaching that course. And I think you can see how much that is a historical past. So it's not just in him, it's also in our time. But that's another whole issue. See, where do we leave off here?
Interweaving a discussion.
Son of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know. I was bottom of 250. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The complex psychological significance of soul as a primordial image of consciousness and of its source, the self. That's what I was going on about. He's fully discussed in Jung.
Mysterium.
Yeah. You see, the sun is one of the sun and the moon are the two main representatives of the opposites in alchemy. Then we get a problem again. As in the first parable, the initial situation of distress passes over without a break into a hymn of praise, this time of honor of the birth of the Savior. So see, in back of all this, in Thomas's mind is Christ.
What is that? The what mind of Christ?
Thomas has in the back of his mind Christ. For this light. Christ is the light.
Again, it's projected out.
Yeah. And you know, I think Jung would say at one time Christ was the light. Christ was the light of the sun. That there, whatever that, whatever Christ was religiously, psychologically, he would represent the self knowledge, knowledge of the self within the self at the beginning of Christianity. But now that light has changed and is trying to change through these visions. It seems much more that moonlight is an image for Christ now.
That's the feminine?
It's the feminine, I believe. This is my opinion. And starlight could be Sophia. And remember the dream of the phallus, candlelight. See, that was from burning desire, shed light on that woman's painting. I think it's so fascinating. Nothing new, but it's a repeat because we're seeing it again, 251. It's second light. It is though the author has got himself again and again into the unconscious darkness of pagan and alchemical context. But as soon as an image of the self is manifest in the chaos, he equates it with Christ and feels safe again. Rehabilitated and delivered from the hand of the enemy. He pushes the problem of the shadow too far away from him so that the darkness always comes back.
So, when he says about the enemy, which you quote in the religious terms would be Satan, he's equating the shadow with Satan. Then.
Yeah, and desirousness.
And desirousness, okay.
Yeah, instinctual. I think, you know, that medieval word, Latin word, concupiscentia? I think concupiscentia, which would be bridal desire.
Okay.
Unbridled desire. I need a name. Unbridled desire.
Wait now.
Unbridled
desire. I do that really well. Right?
Yeah. Sorry.
You just graduated, Patty. Yeah, I think I'll leave well. Good.
Not so easy. Let me reintroduce you to your misery.
Thanks, Jerry. I knew I'd get
going. Try to help her. Okay, more of the same. Then the fullness of time shall come when God shall send his son. I'm not even going to read the rest of it because it's the same idea. Christ. Now, something I've been implying, and we'll say it a couple of times, and I want to just point that out. Go further down in that paragraph. Go to the end of that paragraph before that death. And count up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It, that's the filius philosophorum in the best sense, concerns not merely the birth of the inner man, the self, but at the same time, the rebirth of man's ego consciousness, which means new behavior. If you can keep that palindrome in mind again, new behavior was being cast of him. When it's all said and done after all that symbolism, new behavior. Nothing new in the next paragraph, quote, but it says something concisely which we've been saying, and that is that death which a woman, see I am bottom of 251, that death which a woman brought into the world this day hath a woman put to flight. That is what we're mentioning about the great mother. She lames and she heals. She lames because she wants to depotentiate the false ego, and she heals to bring about the in the Pali dream, do you see the allusion to the Great Mother?
Ocean.
Even more specifically, I think, the boat.
The feminine?
Well, see, the boat is the place where destruction starts, and then it's where the new thing takes place. Right? And the mother as a container contains both of those. I guess the ocean would be two. Yeah, the ocean would be two. A loaded sentence on paragraph on page. Did I read that? So put the light, and the barriers of hell are broken down, for death shall no more have dominion, nor shall the gates of hell prevail against it. Let's say it again. But the paragraph beginning thus on 252. Thus, a typically Christian solution has been found. The alchemist is saved not so much by his own work or by his participation in the birth of a savior. Now, this is the thing to think about. In the unconscious, something becomes complete and whole again. And through it, the ego feels pacified. I'm going to skip a little bit. Without the authors, a couple lines down. Without the authors fully realizing what sort of alterations in his conscious view of the world this would entail. So you feel better, but you don't change. In the comfort given by the old image of Christ at this point. So I think, you know, that's why the church works so well. It's a big binky. But it doesn't necessarily lead to a transformation of consciousness of the task required of our time. Now, the next part is what I wanted to reiterate. It is also not so clear, and I will try to... am I going too fast? Are you with me still? I will try to simplify this, but not water it down. For the tenth groat, which was lost, is found. And the groat is a coin, by the way. The tenth coin, which was lost, is found. And the hundredth sheep is restored in the wilderness. And the number of our brethren from the fall of the angels is fully made up. So humanity is restored. Let me read you, she says, what it's from Luke 5, Luke 15. Does everyone know this story? I didn't.
What's it about?
Okay. Oh, tax collectors and the sinners were all drawing near to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost." Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. Or what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin which I had lost." Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents. This is so complicated. Let me try to give you a summing up and then see if I can give you some details. Basically, the idea is that wholeness is putting all these parts into a totality. The problem is it's an unconscious totality. That's where she's trying to go with it. Bottom line. She wants us to realize more for the sake of her argument how, according to one, St. Gregory, the 10 groats signify the 9 choirs of angels together with its with mankind, which are the property of the divine Sophia. So that there is a reference to Sophia, if you look at ecclesiastical commentary, to this image of the 10. But the main point is that wholeness is getting all pieces together. All the rest of that stuff that she goes into, the decad and the dodecad, they're just different pieces of God. I'm trying to make it real simple. But I don't think you need to worry about that for our purposes. If you just realize how this text wants wholeness to be wants redemption to be a totality, which sounds like what we're talking about. However, for them, they don't make a distinction between a totality of the unconscious and a totality of the unconscious and conscious. I think if you come away with that, that's enough, unless you are dying to know about this very obscure symbolism. She gives the same thing, a parallel to that in Alchemy on 255. Nothing new now, just she's looking at this 10 business in various traditions. Middle 255. From this we can see the alchemical meaning here. Everyone got it? Of 9 and 10, 9 parts of the substance can be sublimated and are therefore represented as birds. But the 10th part is the unsublimable residue. But it's also included. That's what she's trying to get you to see. The entire work of the alchemist is an endeavor to reintegrate that unsublimable residue, the sinners on the earth and the fallen angels, into a whole.
Well, you're talking about everything kind of coming together. You know what I mean?
She's talking about everything coming together, but she wants us to realize that that is an inauthentic coming together, because it is not something that is consciously realized. Okay. See the difference? You feel whole, but it doesn't mean you are whole. You feel contained in the church, and you have a rejuvenated feeling on the Sabbath. But have you learned anything about your path in life? Maybe not. And if not, then what that religious experience gives you is a wholeness in the unconscious, that you're part of, you are a unit which is a whole part of something big. But it doesn't have anything to do with consciousness.
I would say George Bush is an example of that. When he got out of his drinking, he then found Christ, he had a rebirth. And so he goes back to that constantly now. He found
his ego found a place to find healing and comfort, but it didn't do anything in terms of transformation.
Yeah. I think you can say that about all certainly conservative religious.
Born again.
Yeah, there's a feeling of being whole. If you look at the nasty things they
right.
do,
mm-hmm. they haven't changed their behavior.
And they haven't really changed their behavior.
Christians aren't supposed to judge, are they?
What do you mean?
Well, a good Christian doesn't judge, does he?
Judge not, lest he be judged.
This one does.
I'm going to
be spending my tax dollars.
What are they talking about in the passion here? That. At this, the young loan or whatever it is.
Where's that, Carol?
Page 253. Oh, talking about that number six because on it, the passion. But because there was an error, so she's saying that the passion didn't come out of that.
I was trying to avoid that.
Oh, yeah, right. Just mean the numbers.
Okay. You know, it's a Gnostic story which I'm not familiar with.
Okay.
And I haven't really taken the time to bone up on it. But I think the idea is that in the Gnostic system, you know, like we have a Trinity, right? They had like a tenity, and a sixity, and an eightity. They had groupings of gods defined by numbers. And this is saying in one of their stories there's a fleeing and there's a coming back. So she's just trying to look at the bearing of the number 10. So she's trying to look at how 10 implies, in a variety of contexts, the separation and this reunion. I think other than that, you're going to drive yourself crazy. It's not. You'll never need to know this again.
The only reason I'm kind of getting as we're talking about this is that if this whole thing is coming together, then and it is a true reunion. She's saying, like to me, that passion or the life purpose didn't come forth. I mean, because it's not
yeah,
a true.
Right.
I mean, that's how I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
And if it is true, the passion does come up, or the true life purpose.
Well, yeah, to again step back and try to simplify this.
Uh-huh.
The point is that what we are working for is where there is a reconstitution of the self on both the unconscious and conscious level out of the Sophia experience. They are realigned. And other systems may talk about this, but because they're still talking about a community of believers, it never becomes individual. But the wholeness is obtained by your role in a community of believers. Not that you can't go to a community with this experience, but then you go to it differently. And I think there is, you know, during going back to our question, you know, what is meaning? What does it really feel like when the sun and the sun, ego, sun, and self, sun, are in alignment? There's some loneliness in that. It's a strange thing. You would think you would be filled, but you're not. You're not desperately empty. But there's what I would call a genuine emptiness there. And it's on that basis that you can reach out to another person. You don't feel that you are complete and filled without the need of another human being. It's not a neurotic neediness, but there's a subtle loneliness there. And that's what you get rid of when you join a community, but that's part of the road. You need that. And that's what you get rid of when you join a community that substitutes for the self. This sense of, I'm at the church and I feel so renewed. Well, maybe you do, but that's really not the point. The point is, are you living your path? That's the distinction she's trying to make, I think, if you wanted to put it in very concrete, in a very concrete way. So nothing new at the bottom of 255. Looking back, we can see from such amplifications why the five foolish virgins could enter the bridal chamber with the five wise men. They were an integral part of the decade. The next passage is 256. On this redeemed state, I'm just going to read you one part of that text. There'll be no more crying or sorrow. Those former things are passed away. Ha, ha, ha. You can see the inauthentic nature of the understanding of what the redeemed state is.
I thought that was when you died. But it didn't say
that. I don't think so.
But they there's something I think in Revelation about that.
Oh, let me see. That comes up, does it not?
Does it?
Yeah, a little later.
Oh, okay.
That's our Revelation. Oh, that scripture that what you just read.
Mm-hmm.
That one about before the former things have passed away, there should be no more crying or sorrow.
How do you know it's from Revelation?
I do. I just know it's from Revelation.
Oh, well then, I think this is a quotation from Aurora, so this must be then a lifting of that text, which she didn't pick up. If I've got it right, I'm sure that's a quote from Aurora, right?
I don't know. We can look back.
Oh, we can look back. Thank you.
Be towards the end, isn't
it? I think it's marked on the pages too. Well, I'll check this for next time. I'll check it. Probably what's going on.
It's about New Jerusalem, actually, in Revelation.
It must be from the text. Could you see if you can find that in Revelation?
Yeah, I can find it. You have Revelation?
Well, I mean, just for next time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate it, because that might be a reference she missed. I mean, I'm amazing what she. You see how much you have to know to interpret a text like this, all these references. But in that case, then it's even more. If I'm right, I think this is from Aurora. In Revelation, you see, it's at the end of time, right? Here, so there's this final resolution at the end of time. Here, he's saying there's this final resolution not at the end of time, but as a result of the experience, and what. Bonfons wants to say is there is no such thing ever as a final resolution.
Just kind of what you were saying.
This is what you were saying, yeah.
Okay.
And that is a sure indication of phoniness. If you think this thing ever gets solved.
But they use that at funerals all the time.
Yeah, but they're dead.
Yeah, that's what I said. I thought you were supposed to be dead when that happened. You know.
Yeah.
But there are moments, you said.
Well, in the Christian thing, this is projected to the end of time.
Oh.
And what Jung wants to say is that this is somewhat of a description of the redeemed state, which is a moment. Which comes and goes.
Okay.
And there are several of these moments. At that moment when that kid said to me, I listen to records and I say, you don't listen to CDs, I felt things had fallen into place for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you get goosebumps.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was probably talking about what John said about the golden threads or whatever. You get those glimpses. Yeah.
Right.
And carrying attention.
Exactly. Thumb carrying attention. Exactly.
Which then those moments seem, at least for me, to carry me to those
right
times.
That's, you see, when they talk about when this text talks about the vivifying effects of wholeness as this complete state, once and for all, Jung wants to accept it, or Bonfons wants to accept that, as a moment where you get encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
But really, if you're using religious language, encouragement from God. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not to discount that, but we're not to see that as the goal.
Or expectation. Even.
Probably not an expectation, but I think it's fair to wish for guidance.
Oh, I do too.
But the important point isn't the feeling of unity. The important point is that you are doing what you are meant to do.
That goes back to where I just got about the, it's not important to know your life purpose so much as to being daily, you know, I mean, as far as...
I think both are important. To know it and to be living it. Now, you don't know it fully, of course.
Right.
But I think you can get to know pieces of it. Mm-hmm. And when you do, you calm down.
Do you believe there's a kind of a calming down, though, when you know that like this inner work we're doing is all part of it, that there is a, that's part of the purpose, too?
I don't know if I could say that. I can only say for me, inner work's been the tool to find that out.
Okay.
And for me, it adds importance to the work. I don't know if it's the only tool, but it's certainly a tool. Well, it's 2:30. We almost got done. Not bad, huh?
Wow.
We got to, let's say, we'll pick up on top of 2:56 next time. We'll just repeat a little bit. I'd hope to get through 2:60, but that's not bad for today. Why don't you read, I think if you read parable 8, I think you're going to find we're able to pick up a little bit, because we're hearing the same thing again and again now. There'll be differences and there'll be contrasts we need to make. But read through chapter 8.
And that's parable 3, isn't it?
Third parable.
Yeah.
And so we meet, is it two more times before Christmas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, two more times before Christmas. And I'll have made up a schedule for you for the new year. But we won't start until I think we said the 13th of October. Thanks for your hard work, and I'll see you in 2.
Okay. Thank you for your hard work. You're the one that really... And I was reading this last night, and I just thought, I've done this stuff, you know. And, you know, some of the stuff we've done, I didn't enjoy reading that much.
You're stuck with it, huh?
Yeah.
It really cost